Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. South Korea announced Sunday it seized another ship it suspects transferred petroleum products to North Korea in violation of international sanctions. The Panama-flagged Cody was detained 2 weeks ago at a port. It is the second ship the South Korean government has acknowledged investigating in the past 3 days. On Friday, it announced that it had seized and inspected the Hong Kong-flagged lighthouse Wenmore in November because South Korea believed the tanker transferred oil to a North Korean vessel mid-ocean. An explosion at a funeral in eastern Afghanistan has killed a dozen people. A local official told the French news agency AFP the death toll Sunday has jumped to 12 and 14 wounded. Earlier reports said 6 people had been killed and 11 wounded at the funeral for a former district governor. At least 2 demonstrators were reportedly killed during clashes between anti-government protesters and police in Iran Saturday during an anti-government street protest that originally had been prompted by anger over rising prices and a stagnant economy. Using excerpts from a speech he delivered to the United Nations General Assembly, President Trump criticized the government.
The entire world understands that the good people of Iran want change. And other than the vast military power of the United States, that Iran's people are what their leaders fear the most. This is what causes the regime to restrict internet access, tear down satellite dishes, shoot unarmed student protesters, and imprison political reformers.
Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Despite suffering what appears to be debilitating defeats on the ground in Iraq and parts of Syria, the Islamic State terror group is far from dead. That's according to military and intelligence officials from several countries that have been tracking the threat. Even on the ground in Iraq and parts of Syria, where anti-IS coalition officials believe the terror group's fighting force, which once numbered in the tens of thousands, is down to less than 1,000 militants, according to top military officials, and they still remain wary. For now, the focus of U.S. and coalition-backed forces is on an area of Syria known as the Middle Euphrates River Valley. It's an area that extends from the Syrian city of Raqqa to the Iraqi border. Hundreds of thousands of law enforcement, military, and security officials will be deployed in cities around the world to keep New Year's Eve revelers safe as they gather to welcome 2018. In the United States, New York City officials announced that they will use 2-step screening, snipers, street closures, and specially trained dogs to secure Times Square as an estimated 2 million people gather to watch the annual ball drop at midnight. In Las Vegas, Nevada, 300 National Guard troops will join more than 1,500 police officers to keep safe the city's famed strip, home to a number of casinos, resorts, and hotels. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is offering his New Year's greeting.
I urge leaders everywhere to make this New Year's resolution. Narrow the gaps, bridge the divides, rebuild trust by bringing people together around common goals. Unity is the path. Our future depends on it.
A bus accident in central Kenya Sunday morning has killed at least 30 people. AFP reports that the crash occurred when a bus traveling from Busia collided with a truck coming from Nakuru. According to Kenya's Red Cross, 18 people were injured in that wreck. And according to a Kenyan newspaper, The Star, the bus was actually traveling in the wrong lane at the time of the accident. An Egyptian court has handed down a sentence of 3 years to former Islamist President Mohamed Morsi, as well as 19 other people for making statements that insulted the judiciary. The defendants were also fined various amounts of money. Morsi's lawyer said his client would appeal the verdict. The former president has faced a host of charges since his ouster and has already been sentenced to 45 years in prison. Morsi was arrested after being ousted by the Egyptian military in June 2013. He was detained after refusing an ultimatum to hold a popular referendum over his rule in the wake of large protest. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us on this last Sunday of the year. I'm Douglas Impoga. Peter Clote has the day off.
Conflicts have deepened and new dangers have emerged. Global anxieties about nuclear weapons are the highest since the Cold War.
The UN Secretary General warns the world is likely to face many complex and new dangers in 2018.
Cameroon Minister of Higher Education is distributing the laptops. He says all registered university students will have their own share of what is a gift from Cameroon President Paul Biya.
Cameroon begins giving free computers to all university students just months before presidential elections.
There is African concern that the U.S. approach is becoming rather more militarized or more concerned with military and security issues than had been the case in the past.
And the U.S. military is trying to prevent Islamic extremists from taking advantage of the African continent's vast ungoverned spaces. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warns the world is likely to face many complex and new dangers in 2018. In a year-end message, Guterres appeals for greater unity to overcome these threats and create a more peaceful world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UN's European headquarters in Geneva.
When UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres assumed office 1 year ago, the world was in the midst of a hopeful moment. Negotiations to end more than four decades of division on the island of Cyprus appeared to be moving toward a successful resolution. Guterres jumped into the fray and worked tirelessly to produce that outcome. Unfortunately, the Greek and Turkish Cypriots were unable to bury their differences and live as one nation together. The UN chief acknowledges his hopes for a peaceful 2017 have not materialized. Unfortunately, he says, the world in many ways has gone in reverse. Reflecting this darkened mood on the eve of the new year, Guterres says he is issuing what he calls a red alert for our world.
Conflicts have deepened and new dangers have emerged. Global anxieties about nuclear weapons are the highest since the Cold War. And climate change is moving faster than we are. Inequalities are growing, and we see horrific violations of human rights. Nationalism and xenophobia are on the rise, and as we begin 2018, I call for unity.
During this past year, Guterres has had many catastrophic events landing on his desk, begging for resolution. These include Yemen, the world's worst humanitarian crisis, with some 8 million people on the brink of famine and 1 million infected with cholera. Persecution and violence in Myanmar that forced more than 650,000 Rohingya refugees to flee for their lives to neighboring Bangladesh. Syria, approaching its seventh year of civil war, which has killed hundreds of thousands of people and displaced more than 11 million. Conflicts in South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, Afghanistan, Iraq, and many others that continue to take a heavy toll in lives and property. As the world's leading diplomat, Guterres must retain a sense of optimism that things can get better. He says the world can be made safer and more secure. Conflicts and hatred can be overcome. But only, he adds, if world leaders unite to bridge divides and bring people together around common goals. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A bus accident in central Kenya Sunday morning killed at least 30 people. AFP reports the crash occurred on the Nakuru-Eldoret Highway when a bus traveling from Busia collided with a truck coming from Nakuru. According to the Kenya Red Cross, 18 people were injured in the wreck. The Kenya newspaper The Star reports the bus was traveling in the wrong lane at the time of the accident. Elsewhere, Cameroon has begun giving free computers to all university students in what the government says will boost education and research. But the distribution of what is said to be a gift from Paul Biya, one of the longest-serving presidents in the world, months before presidential elections, has generated criticism. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Thousands of students sing as they line up at the University of Yaoundé 2 campus in Soua, 15 kilometers from Cameroon's capital city, to receive free laptops. Among them is Eric Ambe, a 21-year-old second-year law student who says he can now do online research. He says he could not raise $150 to buy a second-hand laptop sold near his university.
We are very happy because you help us to study well, you help to prepare our courses well. We did give.
Professor Jacques Famindongo, Cameroon Minister of Higher Education, is distributing the laptops. He says all registered university students will have their own share of what is a gift from Cameroon President Paul Biya, who is helping young university students secure access to a modern-day digital economy.
Students are very delighted because they receive a fantastic gift from their father, their of state, who loves them and who knows that they are the future of our dear and beloved country. The university community thanks His Excellency Paul Biya for this donation.
The 80,000 laptops being distributed are part of a promise of 500,000 President Biya made in 2016. The government has promised to distribute all of them by April 2018. The computers, manufactured in the Chinese city of Shenzhen in Guangdong province, are branded PBHEV, meaning Paul Biya Higher Education Vision. But here at a computer repair shop at the student residential area of Bonamusadi, three students have already sold their laptops, complaining that they are not of good quality. Pius Ayeni, a hardware maintenance technician, says what is very frustrating to users is that the laptops are sluggish.
The hard drive is too small. The capacity is 32 gigabytes. The processing speed is just 1.44 gigahertz. If you install like Microsoft Office and the operating system, you cannot run any other heavy program.
The government announced it secured a loan of more than $133 million from China to buy the computers. The government says each costs about $550 and they will use the remainder of the loan to train information technology instructors. But opposition political parties say the loan should have been better used to set up a computer assembly plant in the Central African country. The main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, SDF, says Biya is using the computers as a campaign tool ahead of the September 2018 presidential election. The SDF says Gambia invested $7.5 million to begin a technology assembly plant and that Kenya also has one. Cameroon government spokesperson Issa Chiruma says the $133 million invested in the computer project includes a provision for high-speed internet to all universities and institutions of higher learning. He refutes claims that Biya is using the laptops as a campaign tool.
This project is the result of a head of state initiative for Cameroonian students to give them the necessary boost and beyond create the psychological trigger for their insertion in the digital world.
Cameroon will be organizing parliamentary and presidential elections in September 2018. There have been calls from within Biya's ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement for him to run again for president. He is one of the longest serving leaders in the world, already having been president for 35 years. Moki Edwin Kinzeka For VOA News, Yaoundé.
With Islamic State's self-declared caliphate almost completely retaken in Iraq and Syria, U.S. officials are concerned about where the group could try to create its next hub, and Africa may be the likely target. As VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports, the U.S. military is trying to prevent Islamic extremism from taking advantage of the African continent's vast ungoverned spaces.
Poverty, political disillusionment, and masses of young, unemployed Muslims. Those are ideal conditions for Islamic extremism, and they are all found in Africa. Congressman Michael McCaul is the chair of the House Homeland Security Committee.
If we're trying to look in the future, it's actually happening now, that Africa is going to be the spot. It's going to be the hot spot.
The entire African continent has less than half the number of American troops deployed in Afghanistan. But increases in terrorist activity are among the reasons why the American military presence has grown rapidly on the continent, from 3,200 military personnel in 2009 to about 6,500 today.
There is African concern that the U.S. approach is becoming rather more militarized or more concerned with military and security issues than had been the case in the past.
John Campbell, who served as ambassador to Nigeria under President George W. Bush, told VOA the main thrust of effort on the continent should be on what he calls the root causes of extremism, lack of economic development, and poor governance. But this effort will likely prove more difficult if the State Department's budget is slashed by a third, as forecast in the administration's budget plan.
Is, in fact, a security approach going to work? And I would suggest that by and large, no.
U.S. Africa Command, which oversees military activities on the continent, aims to strengthen local African militaries to combat Islamic extremists. Africa's growing young male population is ripe for recruitment. According to Africa Command's senior enlisted leader, Command Chief Master Sergeant Ramon Colon Lopez.
You have no options. And here comes an extremist that is offering you a motorbike and a bride. What do you think you're going to do? Your family's starving, you can't provide for them, and somebody's giving you an option.
The administration this year expanded the authority to strike al-Shabaab and Islamic State fighters in Somalia, allowing offensive strikes against the militants rather than just strikes defending African allies and their American advisors.
It definitely helps, because we're doing our best to go ahead and employ our assets to help them out in any way we can.
But the war against extremism in Africa has not come without a cost. A U.S. Navy SEAL died aiding Somali security forces against al-Shabaab in May, and four American soldiers were killed in an October Islamic State ambush in Niger. If the security needs grow in coming months, more American troops could find themselves facing dangerous situations across the African continent. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Meanwhile, the United Nations Refugee Agency has stepped up its campaign to raise awareness about the plight of millions of stateless people and communities worldwide. In Kenya, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees is lobbying the government to grant citizenship to communities that have lived in the East African nation for decades without nationality. From the coastal port city of Mombasa, Ruben Kiama reports for VOA.
According to the UN Refugee Agency, the stateless communities in Kenya include the Pemba, who came from Tanzania in 1930s and settled mainly along the Kenyan coast. They also include the Shona, who arrived as missionaries from Zimbabwe in 1960s. Others, who have lived in Kenya for decades without formal citizenship, are descended from migrants from Rwanda, Burundi, Congo, Somalia, and India. Wanja Munaita is the Kenyan-based UN Refugee Agency's Assistant Protection Officer in charge of statelessness.
It's a big problem. In Kenya, for example, estimates of 18,000, but those are estimates. We don't have a comprehensive figure. But the problem is quite big. We know that there are many people, many thousands, perhaps in the millions, when we speak about Africa, who do not have legal identity. If you don't have legal identity, you can't be recognized, you will not be accorded basic human rights by the state in which you find yourself.
On November 4th, the world marked the I Belong campaign to end statelessness, where the UN Refugee Agency and its partners sought to draw global attention to the millions of people denied nationality and citizenship the world over. Shame Amisi Makame is a chairman and a village elder of the Pemba community in Kenya's Kwale County. As a result of not having a legal identity, statelessness has made me hopeless. I used to have 3 homes, but none of them was registered under my name. I also bought a plot, but I had to use the name of my neighbor. I've no rights since I'm stateless. I urge the Kenyan government to help us, to help get our legal identity. If we get our legal identity, everything else will be all right. UNHCR officials are calling on governments to end the discriminatory practice by 2024. Hundreds of thousands of Africans are among those who lack proper birth certificates and identity papers. Some have been stateless since independence, others were driven out of their countries by civil war. Most of the communities here remain stateless due to a lack of identification documents, including birth certificates. Kenya's nationality laws have made it difficult for many to access citizenship. Felix Lore is the executive director of the human rights advocacy group, the Haki Center.
Kenya outlines the Kenyan nationality in 2 ways. First, we have nationality through birth, and then we have nationality through registration. Whereas one becomes a Kenyan national by birth when either the mother or the father is a Kenyan. So on the other hand, when you go for the registration again, the most basic one is you must have been residing in Kenya within a minimum of 7 years continuously for a continuous period. So what hinders Pembas at that particular point is they have been living in Kenya for much longer than that period. But the problem is, how then can they prove that they have been living in Kenya for those years, because they don't have any other document. They don't have any document to prove that.
Officials say a large number of the people affected by statelessness in Kenya are children. As a result of being denied citizenship, most stateless people are often not allowed to go to school, see a doctor, or even own property. Munaita says through the I Belong campaign, UNHCR hopes it will sensitize governments and other stakeholders to take the issue seriously.
Our place is to advocate, is to keep advocating with government, in order for the government to recognize these communities and pockets of individuals who find themselves stateless in the country. So we are advocating through the I Belong campaign. We also have the Global Plan to End Statelessness, which was launched in 2014.
Globally, there are at least 10 million people who are stateless, most of them minorities. Through the campaign, the UN Refugee Agency hopes to put an end to statelessness by the year 2024, and also prevent new cases from emerging. In 2014, Tanzania granted citizenship to some 200,000 refugees from neighboring Burundi who had lived in the country since 1972, a move hailed by the UN Refugee Agency. Just last year, the Makonde, a community of over 4,000, became Kenya's 43rd officially recognized tribe. They came from northern Mozambique and southeast Tanzania nearly 100 years ago to work on sisal and sugarcane farms. Earlier this year, the Makonde activists met with President Uhuru Kenyatta, who approved their naturalization as citizens. He apologized to them that it took so long for them to enjoy the legal rights of fellow Kenyans, and added, "Today is the last day you will be called visitors." Ruben Chama, VOA News, Mombasa, Kenya.
Holidays, the holidays are often a time for families to get together, catch up on the new year gone by, and share future plans. For some, it's a deeply religious time, and for others, it's a balancing act. Research shows nearly a third of married Americans have spouses of a different religion. This trend is similar around the world. We take a look at balancing acts some families experience during the holidays when more than one faith is observed. Nadia Sami caught up with a Kenyan mother who is raising her family in a Muslim Christian household.
Mariam Abdullah and her husband have been married for 14 years. She's a devout Muslim and he's an observant Christian. To protect the family's identity, we aren't using her real name. The couple have three children. According to the dominant interpretation of the Quran, a Muslim woman is not allowed to marry a non-Muslim man. However, a Muslim man is allowed to marry people of the book. The reason often cited is that a woman may be prohibited from practicing her faith if she marries outside of her religion. But this interpretation is increasingly being challenged. Mariam says in her family, there is complete freedom for both parties to embrace their religious practices.
It's a small, young, and very God-fearing family. I honestly do not think that we have two religions as such. We don't even realize, because we all believe in one God. So balancing the two is easy. I've not seen any difficulties when it comes to that.
Mariam says it's all about respect and compromise.
At our home, we've all decided to be neutral. Let's see, for the wall paintings, we don't have that. We only have family portraits. But we do have a Bible and we have a Quran at home. When it's Christmas, it's Christmas. We all celebrate. And when it's Eid, it's Eid. We all celebrate. We don't have an issue at such.
But there are challenges for families like Mariam's, whether from relatives or society, which often frowns upon interfaith marriage.
Difficulty from the society. In the beginning, yes, I did. But at the end of the day, where we are, they've all accepted, because I showed them this is what I want and this is me. So they had no choice, because we did the church thing, so I was accepted there, and we went to the mosque and they accepted him. So society is okay right now. It's 14 years down the line.
Her family has broken down barriers, but even today some obstacles remain.
It's only maybe when I go to his family, and maybe when he comes to my family, that there are some things that maybe he's expected to do. And when I go to his family, maybe there are some things that they expect me to do. But at the end of the day, I think we've come to a breakthrough, I'd call it, because they understand him and they understand me as well.
A common question faced by couples who choose to marry across faith lines is how their children will be raised and whether the little ones would be confused by their own religious path.
My children have adapted so well that we've decided we're going to teach them each differently. And they know once they go to the other side, they know what to do, because we've explained to them from the word go. So we told them at the end of the day, they're at liberty to choose where they want to be.
Mariam's advice to similar families is simple this holiday season.
Be strong. Follow your heart. We all believe in one God. We all die at some point. Let God be the judge. They say that marriages are made in heaven, and so is mine. I believe that God made this one for me. So the key word, I think, I'd tell all of you to respect one another. If you want to be respected, you have to respect somebody else.
A common thread among successful interfaith families is acceptance and respect for all faiths. While several face difficulties in the outside world because of their choice to be together but different, in their own homes, the melting pot of faith has provided peace and joy. Many also report their exposure to different belief systems has actually strengthened their own faith journey. For VOA Africa, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And still to come in the program, music from our African collection for your listening pleasure and relaxation. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Yes, now it's time for our Saturday Music Spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music. Misuru wari ya nidondoka Tukimbiza nini sarome wangu Iyo michezo ya jogo Unawatiza machini sarome wangu Ukimuona jongo Inama kidogo, shika magoti Mini mesimama kama ngongoti Mtoto jojo, siyo roboti Chumbani bingiri bingiri saba zoti Unante kinyaga ukinyonga sarome Unante kinyaga ukinyonga Unante kinyaga ukinyonga kweri Unante kinyaga ukinyonga Aprokoto, tingali tingali ndani kwa moto Mtamyongea, msokoto Temesu mukali kama koboko Mwapenzi ananipa shida Shida mama Nidonde lisuku na tiba Tiba mwana Usije baby, kanicharanga Kanichambua moyo kakaranga Nye baby, kwenye msamwanda Mwasinga kingenge ninganganga Unante kinyaga kinyonga sarume
kangaru ibane kangwaru babu juma mpige kwa kwaru kwa kwaru kwa asa chambua kama karanga sasa
chambua kama karanga
ichambue kama karanga sarome
chambua kama karanga
asa washa washa moto washa washa songa songa uga songa songa pakaji eji pakaji eji
Wenye wivu wajinyonge leo
Wenye wivu wajinyonge
oh, Wenye wivu wajinyonge sana
Wenye wivu wajinyonge
Wenye wivu wajinyonge kweri
Wenye wivu wajinyonge
oh, Wenye wivu wajinyonge sana
Wenye wivu wajinyonge
Wanakodoa kodo Wanakodoa
Macho kodo
Wanakodoa kodo Wanakodoa
Wale kodo
Wanakodoa kodo
Wanakodoa
Ukinyonga
Wanakodoa
moja moja go down.
Embere.
Go down. Hata mara moja moja jiweke down.
Bamba yangu.
Go down. Hata mara moja moja go down.
Embere.
Go down. Hata mara moja moja jiweke down.
Once upon a time, once upon a rhyme.
Nakumbuka Mary alikusumbua.
Once upon a time, once upon a rhyme.
Ujitahidi sana bado kachengua.
Umekumbwa na jini gani? Mbona mami hatuelewani? Hata jini kisirani so kama we.
Wala jini makata kufikiwe.
Kosa langu kukuweka ndani. Haijulikani ndani mwanaume nani. Kila siku vituko tu.
Mara moja moja baby unajiweka down.
Kwanza sema na moyo wako, usiringie uzuri wako. Kuna kupandaga mami na kushuka.
Tupendane forever mpaka kufa.
Usiku nikipita Twitter, mami na kukuta Twitter. Nikisema nikucheki Insta, nakuta usha posti picha.
Pesa zisikupe uchizi,
kiburi na kutudharau.
Wale tulokupa shavu, sasa unatusahau.
Atamara moja moja go down.
Embere.
Go down. Atamara moja moja jiweke down. Go down. Atamara moja moja go down.
Embere.
Go down.
Atamara moja moja jiweke down.
I wanna feel love.
Tulia tulia mami upate raha. Baki kwangu mami upate raha.
Punguza maringo kidogo ya. Punguza na nyodo kidogo ya. Wacha kubinua kichugu.
Hata wende wapi kwako nimesha nasa.
Go down. Hata mara moja moja go down.
Tembere.
Go down. Hata mara moja moja jiweke down. Go down. Hata mara moja moja go down.
Tembere.
Go down. Hata mara moja moja jiweke down.
Tulia.
Baby girl,
mami,
Masha,
it's Jikoni, baby.
Sinachi, my loving daughter, Sinachi mo, my baby mama, Sinachi, tell him momo do, Sinachi mo, no be by force to go Dubai, I've been awaiting cause the fight, and I just name my own, they laugh, yeah, because you got you day my side, they want to take away my favor, they want to spoil in my career, and I know say I get the flavor, and you feel taxing na banya, I forgive and I forget, Baba God, he knows the best, my papa. Just buy you jets. I'm about to take off everywhere. Hey, what's in that tree? I'm no qua. What's in that tree? One name, man. What's in that tree? Oh, I'm watching. Hey, what's in that tree? Mama. What's in that tree? I'll be fair. What's in that tree? Oh, I'm watching.
I go name my first daughter, Sinachi. My loving mother, Sinachuku. Promotion letter, Sinachimu.
baby, I want me see my hey. Now we shutting down Malaysia. Every show the boy they conquer. Thank you, Lord, you showed me love. Now I know I'm not alone. I go sing praises from house to church. I go throw party for every town. See my motto, see my mouth. Tell me why I no go shout. Not because I suffer fast. Not because I pray at fast. Not be your show, not be jazz. Oh, quite cheap. Tell me, oh, sin at I'm no qua, oh, sin at you. One name, man, oh, sin at you. Oh, quite cheap.
And I thank the Lord who oversee me. And I thank the Lord for humble smith. And I thank the Lord who give me power. Oh, and I thank the Lord for all the riches. And they pray for house, you give me mansion. And they pray for car, you give me phantom. And they pray for fans, you give me Saturn. Oh, you they show me love, you know, be like.
You work with me, my family, see not to cook. If not be God, where I for there? Whatever we go, give God the glory. We the travel, they go, they come. Everything we do, they prosper. Now because your name not favor. All is by the grace of God. Plenty people done the ask. Now what the Baba do the task? Yeah, the Baba do well for me. Now my life become better. Not because I suffer fast. Not because I pray and fast. No be your show, no be just. I'm watching.
She got me dancing, party, fiesta, forever.
kabisa mena inimalizanga.
Dance, party, fiesta, forever.
Yes, that was our Sunday music spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Now, let's take a closer look at Africa. One man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Take it away, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. On the eve of the new year 2018, Africans in particular should be pleased with the number of peaceful change of government that occurred during this year. Unfortunately, there were bombs on the road in some instances. In Kenya, in an unprecedented move, the Supreme Court nullified the election of a presidential candidate and called for new elections. This was met by violence in confrontation between the opposition and the police. In Liberia, there was an initial acceptance of the results by Jammeh, the incumbent president, but when he reversed himself, the regional powers used military force to compel him to accept the results, and he had to leave the country and is now in Equatorial Guinea. In South Africa, we found a peaceful change not for a government, but for the presidency of the African National Congress, the oldest political movement in Africa. But that candidate will be the flag bearer of the ANC in the coming year 2018. Particularly in Liberia, we found that the Supreme Court also stopped the runoff to allow the Electoral Commission to listen to the complaint of political parties who claim there were problems in the regulation of the results. But that was done, and we now have last week a free election which produced a new president-elect of Liberia, George Weah, the football legend, and also a concession by his opponent, Vice President Bouake, who in conceding made himself available to the president if he should so need his services. The election of George Weah in Liberia is significant not only because this would be the first free transfer of power over 70 years, it is because he is not a typical African politician. Even when he reluctantly entered the race in 2005 as a politician and he lost in the runoff, I mean led the first round, he was gracious enough to say that was not yet his time. Last week was his time, and he won very convincingly in all parts of the country except one county, with 61.5%. Regrettably, during the campaign, there were some Liberians who spoke and said that he was not well educated. One wonders what do they mean by educated. Does it mean that even degrees which were awarded or achieved are a significant evidence of ability to lead a nation? There is no convincing evidence that this is the case. And the people of Liberia should be congratulated that they saw the quality of Mr. George Weah rather than the titles which he may have or may not have. He also is not the type of politician that deals in bombast and exaggeration of his achievements. He is a man who listens to others. Rarely does he speak of himself as I. He speaks of his team. And these qualities should be welcome in Africa. The question now is, with his lack of experience in government, will he succeed? Now, we have seen, as in France, that President Macron, at 39, with no experience before he became president, is doing very well. So there is no reason why Mr. Weah should not do well in Liberia if he has the necessary support. He has made it very clear that he would be looking for all available talents in Liberia, no matter what their political affiliations may be. Particularly, he wants those Liberians who are now domiciled abroad to come back and help build their nation. This is a quality which has been missing in many African countries, and if he should succeed, that will be welcome indeed. There have also been some criticism of Mr. Weah in choosing his running mate, the wife of Mr. Charles Taylor, Mrs. Joelle Taylor. That is very surprising because Mrs. Taylor is an accomplished politician, well-qualified and experienced. This commentator was a fervent critic of Charles Taylor, but there is no reason whatsoever why Mrs. Taylor should be compromised by the crimes of her husband. We have seen in the United States, Hillary Clinton was pilloried because of the problems of her husband. In South Africa, we saw that Dr. Zuma, the former chairperson of the African Union, was also criticized for the problems of her former husband. The people of Liberia should be commended for not following that trap and realize the quality of Mrs. Taylor on her own time and not linked with that of her husband. The question has also been raised whether the defeat of the Liberty Party is detrimental to the achievement of the current president, Mrs. President Helen Johnson Sirleaf. This is not necessarily the case, even though during the campaign she was criticized for not keeping her promises to alleviate the suffering of the people of Liberia. But there was a consensus, and that consensus was that she stabilized Liberia. And that in itself was a monumental achievement. As we have seen in Sierra Leone, the difficulties of some Sierra Leoneans understanding the monumental achievement of former President Tijan Kabah in rescuing a failed state and making it a normal polity, so should President Johnson Sirleaf be recognized for a major achievement in rescuing the failed state of Liberia and putting that state in a position for the new president-elect to build on in terms of economic development when he takes over in a few weeks in January. So let's wish the new president-elect all the best and Liberia a prosperous new year. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN and Secretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of us here at the Nightline Africa team, I thank you for joining us tonight on this last Sunday of the year. I'm Douglas Impuga, wishing you a happy and prosperous new year.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Lesotho will resume its second compact with the Millennium Challenge Corporation, an independent United States foreign aid agency. That was the decision of the MCC board, which met in Washington, D.C. on December 19th. Following the meeting, Chief Operating Officer Jonathan Nash spoke to Prime Minister Thabane to advise him of the board's decision to reselect Lesotho after a two-year hiatus. The board recognized the concrete steps taken by the government of Lesotho over the past year that demonstrate a commitment to addressing MCC's ongoing rule of law concerns. While the decision will allow Lesotho to restart the development of its second compact, the board noted that it will continue to closely monitor the situation. Over the coming weeks and months, representatives from MCC will visit Lesotho to work alongside the government of Lesotho partners to identify and develop priority investments to address constraints on economic growth. Throughout this process, MCC will work with Lesotho to facilitate consultations with civil society and the private sector to ensure that projects incorporate local perspectives and promote self-sufficiency that continue long after MCC's investment ends. Lesotho successfully completed their first MCC compact in 2013. Focused on reducing poverty and increasing economic growth, the $362.5 million compact supported investments in the construction and renovation of 138 health clinics, digging 10,000 latrines in villages nationwide, renovating 14 outpatient departments in hospitals, and alongside other donors, helping establish the Metalong Dam, one of the largest infrastructure projects in Lesotho's history. Although Lesotho was initially selected to develop a second compact in December 2013, the MCC board deferred its vote on continued eligibility in 2015 and 2016. The Millennium Challenge Corporation is an innovative and independent U.S. foreign aid agency that is helping lead the fight against global poverty. Created by the U.S. Congress in January 2004, with strong bipartisan support, MCC has changed the conversation on how best to deliver smart U.S. foreign assistance by focusing on good policies, country ownership, and results. MCC provides time-limited grants promoting economic growth, reducing poverty, and strengthening institutions. The United States is proud to work with its partner, the government of Lesotho, to help the people of Lesotho achieve a productive and prosperous future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.